From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm your host, Kennedy Vincent. Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. Today, we have the extraordinary pleasure of speaking with a man whose life story reads like an American epic, a journey that spans from the cotton fields of Mississippi to the highest echelons of federal law enforcement and back again. Our guest today is Robert Moore, retired United States Marshal, former Chief of Police of Jackson, Mississippi, pioneering Illinois State Trooper, and celebrated author. But those titles barely scratch the surface of his remarkable journey. He became part of the Great Migration, moving north to Illinois, where he would shatter barrier after barrier in law enforcement. He was trained by the Illinois State Police as a civil rights advocate and became one of the first Black Illinois State Troopers to serve as an Equal Employment Opportunity Director, fighting for both justice on the streets and within the system itself. And in 1994, one of his proudest moments happened. President Bill Clinton appointed him as a United States Marshal, making him only the second Black presidential appointee to that position in Illinois. Robert Moore is walking in the footsteps of legends like Bass Reeves and Frederick Douglass. He's joining us on Dialogue today to discuss his newly published autobiography, Off My Neck, a book he not only wrote but published through his own company, Black Marshal Publishing. And it's an inspiring and motivational story that connects one man's determination to the broader tapestry of American history. Robert Moore is living American history. Let's talk about the book. Why did you choose Off My Neck as the title? What does this mean to you, and what do you want readers to understand from this?
Well, I want readers to understand one perfect thing. The book is about not only about me, it's about them also. Because each reader has something on their neck that they could get off. Regardless, the thing that was on my neck, what I was referring to is leaving Mississippi to get the racism and the yoke that the ceiling, not the glass ceiling that women talk about, but there was a ceiling also for Black men that you couldn't come up through the system in a normal way. And so I needed to get all of that off of my neck because I knew my potential. I really did. I always felt that I was going to be an important aspect in society. I felt that my training, my temperament would allow me to move through the system, but I had to get these things off of my neck. Mm-hmm. And so I played with the title for quite a while, and I ran it by several other authors, and I really originally thought I wanted to name it Power, Prestige, and Purpose. Mm. But I got convinced that my story borders on basically getting things off of my neck, like being in segregation, the Jim Crow laws and all that. And if I got that off my neck and moved into Illinois, but what I found out that moving to Illinois, that there was still racism.
Yes.
Not that I was shocked, but I felt that the racism, it wasn't quite as pervasive as it was in Mississippi because the legislature enforced segregation in Mississippi. It wasn't so. It was an individual stuff up here in Illinois. So I was able to look at that but Off of My Neck is a story for all readers as well as my readers. That if you get things off your neck, regardless whether it's alcohol, drugs, or those things that are on your neck. If you get those things off your neck, you might be able to rise to the level of where God has your purpose in life.
Mm.
So I found my purpose by getting Illinois, but there's a lot of help. That's, I must say that you can't do anything by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I had mentors. I had white mentors. I had black mentors. And I found that you just can't discriminate in terms when it comes to mentors. You need all kind of mentors to help you move forward.
This one particular subtitle is very powerful. From Algoma Dirt Roads to the Front Lines of Justice. Can you talk about what the front lines of justice really means in your context, and what were those front lines throughout your whole career, if you could sum that up?
Yes. Coming out of Algoma, there's a little town of 300 and dirt roads and cotton fields and cotton gins, of which I used to run up and down, walk to church and ride to the wagon in church. And but to move from that environment to the front lines of justice, what I mean, moving into the law enforcement arena and moving to the level of which I became, moving to a deputy chief of police in Savannah, Georgia, chief of detectives, moving to the quarters of Illinois as a U.S. Marshal and running that entire 46 county, then moving back to Mississippi to run the largest police department in the state of Mississippi. Those are the halls of justice. That's where justice began, because we have so much contact with our citizens out there. And justice is, we have to help regulate that justice. But those are the halls of justice, not only in the streets there, but in the courthouses throughout the world, throughout the nation. And specifically, I call the Hall of Justice where you're appointed by the President of the United States, where you are at the highest level of government in the federal government and the halls of justice. So that's kind of what I'm referencing to as getting to the halls, to the quarters of justice. And I encourage my readers to read the book to understand how it is that they can benefit from understanding the law.
Mm-hmm.
And there are sections in my book where I have did some research before that I included in the book in terms of how to build trust between the police and the black community. And there's one I got in there on terms of how to act when stopped by the police.
Mm.
So those are some things that we encourage people to understand and getting to the halls of justice. And we all look for treatment, look for equal treatment. And I think that's what I look at in terms of the halls of justice, in terms of how we treat our citizens, in terms of how we all interact with one another.
Looking at modern policing today and kind of the conversations we have around police reform, racial justice, and accountability, what lessons from your career do you think are most relevant, and what would you tell young black officers entering the field today?
The first thing I would tell them, get into the system. You can't. I tell people all the time, I'd rather be inside rather than throwing bricks at the system. My experiences have been extraordinary from the inside in terms of sitting at the table with decision makers and in order to influence there. And my writings
I wrote my first article, Strategy for Increasing Black Police Executives, is when I was still a trooper, and it got published nationwide by the FBI Law Enforcement Bulletin. And had I not been inside, I never would have been able to write that article and get it published, and it became the model for the nation. So I'm telling young black men to get into the system. Keep your skirts clean, and educate yourself. Learn the system. Learn the all organizations are political system. Police departments are political system. You have to learn the systems in order to be able to change the system. You have to know what pressure points to use, but you have to get inside to learn. And I'll give you a prime example of situation I recruit for. I've recruited for the Springfield Police Department, the Fire Department. And I knew nothing hardly about what was going on inside, because we had a dim view of their recruiting process until I got inside. They brought me inside to look at everything. And I found out a lot of things, that there were more blacks in the fire department than we actually knew about. And my greatest point is, prepare yourself to get inside, work from the inside to get things changed. Because at this point in time, the old strategies of beating folks up from the outside, it just don't work anymore.
You truly represent someone who has worked for change from inside of the system. For someone who's listening to this and they're really skeptical about reform on the inside, how would you tell them that there is a viable path today? And what advice would you give to those who are just have lost faith and hope in our systems?
There's two strategies. I look at there are two strategies of which I use. Number one, I use the strategies from working with inside to help change policy, but I also work with external groups. I work with the civil rights groups, the outside, in order to help get the things changed, the policies changed, then the laws change. So there's a process of which you just don't take one strategy to include in this whole process. You got to be able to work from the inside and from the outside. But you work with groups. That's why I belong to the NAACP. I help run the NAACP as a law enforcement officer. I'm the second vice president of the Springfield branch of the NAACP. I'm the statewide chair of the Criminal Justice Committee for the whole state of Illinois. And I advise all of the NAACP presidents statewide on criminal justice issues. I have reached a level with people trust me, and I guess that's the key word. I think that has to be talked about is when people trust you, when you have credibility, people will believe in you, and so that's what I do. I make sure that my advice is sound. I make sure that I'm credible, and I know how to work both sides of the fence. And so, but you got to have more than one way of doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And even though I work from the inside, I still have to have those contacts from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Saying you've done so much in your life is really an understatement. It doesn't even live up to everything that you've done. But having gone from Mississippi to Illinois, back to Mississippi, in positions of just increasing authority, what does coming full circle mean to you at this point in your life?
Legacy, I guess, in terms of that. And you know, what's so proud of me that my grandkids have seen me work through this whole process. And they can... that my grandkids can articulate what their grandfather has done. That's important in terms of legacy. There are people all over the country now can articulate that you can really work from inside. And that's what my book's about. That's why I wrote the autobiography. And autobiographies are not the most easiest thing in the world to write, I find out. And so, but I am now not afraid to put my life out in the public. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a how-to book. And so the lesson that I've learned that you need to write something for somebody else to read. You know, it might not pick it up today. And I'll tell you another anecdotal thing. Frederick Douglass's autobiography. And I did not know that he had included his tenure as U.S. Marshal in his autobiography. And I started researching when I became Marshal. I found out that he wrote about his experience under the first president, Rutherford B. Hayes, who appointed him in 1877. And I found out that, you know, he left that for me. He left that 1870, he wrote that. And I found it, and I benefited from that. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly hoping that somebody is going to pick up my book 100 years from now, maybe 50 years from now, to see what I did, and for somebody else to build upon that system that has to be built upon. As you know, research, that's what researchers do. We find what somebody else has done. We build upon that. And we certainly hope that someone will build upon this book that I have just published.
What is the responsibility that not only you feel to continue to share your stories, but what gives you hope about our future?
I'm very, I guess, glee about future, because I guess the pendulum swings. I know Eck Allen Poe's pendulums that swing back and forth. And right now we're in a negative swing with the administration. But this too will pass. That's kind of how I look at it. Mm-hmm. The pendulum will swing back to where it needs to be. And so what we have to do, we have to be prepared to deal with whichever pendulum swing. And we have to be prepared to ride it out. We have to be prepared to build when opportunities come. But we have to continue to do research. We have to continue to do the due diligent things that we have to do in order to make sure that our future is secure. But we have to do a better job with our Black kids. I find myself scratching my head so often that we can't reach more of our kids than we do. But we can't give up. And so hopefully that I can get more people to read my book and to understand that you can really move through the system, even though you got the yoke of stuff on your neck. And the other thing is that you can't stop because you do have crap on your neck. You got to continue to move to try to get it off your neck in order for you to move up into the systems.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Moore, thank you so much for showcasing the depth and significance of your remarkable journey. Your story represents such an important chapter in American history that deserves to just be thoroughly documented and widely shared.
Well, thank you for allowing me to come on.
Dialogue is produced by Ariel Raveny and myself, Kennedy Vincent. Our news and public affairs director is Reginald Hardwick, and production assistance by Steve Mork. Dialogue is a part of Illinois Soul and Illinois Public Media. Join us for our next dialogue every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1. And WILL AM 580 Wednesdays at 8 p.m.